Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we're beginning text number 10. We're back to the Tattvasandarbha main text. Ataivam shabdas yaiva pramanatve paryavasite kosau shabda iti vivechaniyam. In this way we can conclude that verbal testimony, shabda, is the only certain means for acquiring valid knowledge. And having thus concluded, we should consider precisely what this shabda is. Tatra brahmadi rahitam vachak shabda ityanenaiva paryaptir nasyat. We're on text 10. It's in file 13 if you want to look at it. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, you're right. Boy, sorry. Okay. I'm reading from the wrong place. Oh. Help me find file 2 again. Anyway, nothing, no harm done in having read that, just two sentences. Put it into a view normal. Okay. Okay, start again. Tatas tani napramananityanadi siddha sarvapurusha paramparasu sarvalaukika alaukika jnana nidanatvad aprakritivakshana lakshano veda evasmakam sarvatita sarvashraya sarvachintya ascharya swabhavam vastu vividishatam Vividishatam pramanam. Therefore, these are not reliable sources of valid knowledge. That is, all the pratyaksha, all the pramanas, except for shabda, and even shabda, if it's not a paurusheya shabda, are not reliable sources of valid knowledge. You may get some knowledge, but they're not totally reliable. We want to understand the object which transcends everything, which is the shelter of everything, and whose wonderful nature no person can conceive or imagine. For this, our source of knowledge can only be the Vedas. The Vedas consist of non-material sound, and they alone should be our pramana because they are eternally self-manifest, and from them have issued all departments of knowledge, mundane and spiritual, among all schools of human thought since time immemorial. Okay. That's only one sentence. That's the whole Anuchet, I think. Yes. Very important, though. The appendix commentary on this in the Sarvasamvadini goes on and on and on. It's a very complex, very deep analysis of this. basic point here is that the Vedas comprise the ultimate reliable authority. Because the Vedas alone are perfect Shabda Praman. We talk about all the schools of knowledge. Anadi Siddha Sarva Purusha Paramparasu. I took that to mean that Anadi Siddha doesn't mean the people, that they're perfect people, but there's all kinds of people, and these paramparas have been going on forever. Anadi Siddha doesn't mean perfect, it means just established since time immemorial. The various schools of thought among all sorts of people which have been established since time immemorial. Okay, there's a commentary here. Not too long, I'll read it. However useful may be ordinary sense, perception, logic, and expert opinion in their proper realms, they are useless in approaching the transcendental reality. It's not just a question of reliability or infallibility, but of scope. And these other pramanas can't really say anything properly about the absolute truth. It's beyond all of them. Even if they're good within their own scopes. That higher reality simply cannot be reached by any human endeavor. Only when it chooses to reveal itself can anyone know it. In Vedic terms, the process needs to be descending, avarohapanta, rather than ascending, arohapanta. The absolute truth makes itself known in the most reliable way by Shabda Pramana, words of authority that are aparusheya, not created by any mortal being. Authentic scriptures of various cultures reveal aspects of the Supreme Intelligence. But among them, the Vedic literature distinguishes itself by its scope of conception. Okay, there are other revealed scriptures, even outside of India. We're just saying that their revelation is partial. Prabhupada gives the example of dictionary. All the dictionaries may be authorized, authentic, but you have a small pocket dictionary which only has a certain number of words and a certain amount of explanation of each word, and the unabridged dictionary, which is equally authentic, but has a lot more information in it. So the Vedas are like that compared to the scriptures of other cultures. Continuing, the Vedas and their supplements offer a great variety of approaches to the absolute, for people in different situations in life and on different levels of spiritual development. The Vedic literature includes thousands of separate texts, yet when the whole is carefully studied and compared, it proves consistent. Many generations of reputable, discriminating brahmanas have been satisfied to direct their lives according to Vedic authority. Not merely because their parents did so, but because these brahmanas have experienced for themselves the practical benefits. By living according to the Vedic standards of self-control in body and mind, one becomes peaceful and clear-headed, fit to understand the highest purposes of life. These are the actual discriminating brahmins. There are others who are externally Brahmins. They don't really study anything properly. And if they have any purpose of the Vedas, it's just to put 20 rupees in their pocket. But the real Brahmanas, their opinion should be taken seriously. So many of them accept the Vedas as their authority. This Anucheda of Sri Tattva Sandarbha calls the Vedas the source of all kinds of knowledge, mundane and spiritual, among all schools of human thought since time immemorial. In other words, all knowledge comes from the Vedas. The various branches of worldly scholarship and even corrupted and faulty teachings are all derivative reflections of the original Vedic knowledge. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 14th chapter, Lord Krishna gives an outline of how this came to be so. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Kalena Nashta Pralaye Vaniyam Veda Sangita Mayadao Brahmane Prokta Dharmo Yasyam Madatmakaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost during the annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Krishna doesn't claim to be the author of the Vedas. Vedanta Krid Veda Vide Vachaham. I am the author of the Vedanta Sutra, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna doesn't claim to be the karta, or the lekaka, of the Vedas. He does claim to be the knower, and he's also the object of knowledge, prameya. I am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Tena prokta swaputraya manave purvajaya sa tato brigvadayo grihnan sapta brahma maharshaya. Lord Brahma spoke this Vedic knowledge to his eldest son Manu, and from Manu the seven great sages, headed by Bhrigu Muni, then accepted the same knowledge. Tebhya pitribhyas tatputra devadanava guhyakaha manushya siddhagandharva savidya dharacharanaha kindeva kinnaranaga rakshakim purushadaya. From the forefathers headed by Bhrigu Muni and other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, and guhyakas, as human beings, siddhas and gandharvas, as vidyadharas and charanas, and as kindevas, kinnaras, nagas, kimpurushas, and so on. Bhakriyas tesham prakritayo rajaksattvatamo bhuvaha yabir bhutani vidyante Bhutanam patayastata yata prakriti sarvesham chitravachak sravantihi. All of the many species in the universe, along with their respective leaders, appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great many Vedic rituals, mantras, and rewards. Evam prakriti vaichitriyad bidyante matayo nvinam padam paryena keshanchit pashanda matayo pare. Thus, due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different philosophies of life, which are handed down through tradition, culture, custom, and disciplic succession. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic views. These all derive from the original Vedas, as passed down through different species of demigods, sages, and human beings, and different schools of thought. Even the atheistic schools come indirectly from the Vedas.
Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan
comments that Shabda Praman is contaminated when subject to the human imperfections of ordinary speakers and hearers. In other words, when it is not a Paurusheya. In such cases, each authority presents so-called final theories only to be corrected by successors. In the words of the Mahabharata, Vanaparva, Nachasav Rishir Yasyamatam Nabinnam. One is not considered a sage unless he has a different opinion of his own. To approach the absolute truth, then, one must hear from a transparent intermediary connected to the Apaurusheya source of knowledge. In the Sarasamvadini, Srila Jiva presents the arguments of various philosophers in support of the authority of the Vedas. We are not proposing as a practical program that we study the Vedas. There are people, even nowadays, who think that the proper following of the ancient Vedic culture is to literally study the Vedas, even nowadays. But it's not a practical program. Jiva Goswami will discuss this in the upcoming Anuchedas. There's difficulties involved in the Kali Yuga in trying to understand the Vedas. Our authority is Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srimad Bhagavatam is perfect expression of the Vedic knowledge that's accessible to us. We'll discuss that later. It's premature to start discussing the authority of the Bhagavatam that we're coming up to. Do we have any questions about the authority of the Vedas? Or about what's in this Anuchedas?
All pure knowledge originally comes from the Vedas, and all other types of knowledge, may they be distorted or not.
Or incomplete.
Or incomplete, comes from the Vedas.
Yes, that's the idea. But that means Vedas are then the original authority and the root authority. If we're going to use anything as our means of knowing, it should be in accord with the Vedas. Even if we don't try to use the Vedas directly, what we do use should be approved by the Vedic authority. Yes?
But for example, in the case of different religions, they were founded by some personality like Christ or Muhammad, and it's not Vedic Shabda, it's some other Shabda. So they have their own origin. So how to understand, how to put it together that all knowledge is distorted knowledge of Vedas?
What was the last part of the question?
For example, in the case of different religions, they have their origin.
I didn't say that, but what was the last sentence?
So how we can put together that all knowledge which we have in this world is distorted knowledge of Vedas, or changed, or incomplete knowledge of Vedas? For example, we have some religion, and we have this explanation with pocket dictionary and big dictionary and unabridged dictionary.
How can we say that they have the same authority as the Vedas? Well, that's just being kind. It's not that all proposed religions are as authoritative as, you know, the religion that is based on the Vedas. Some of it is just hocus-pocus made up by somebody. Some of it is just bogus. But there are authentic religions. There are some, here and there, God does reveal himself, even outside of India. God actually speaks to some people, or a pure devotee of God comes and speaks to some people. Problem is, how is that knowledge preserved? Even if God spoke to Moses or to somebody else, what happened after that? You know, Moses taught it to somebody else, and then it got taught to somebody else, and it got twisted, you know, over the generations. Unless you have a perfect parampara to pass down the knowledge, even if it starts from God, it can get distorted. So you need to have a perfect source and also a perfect means of preserving. Then you have absolutely authoritative knowledge. And that you don't have in other traditions. Even if there's some revelation coming from God, it hasn't been preserved purely.
But still, we can tell that Dharmamsa Sakshat Bhagavad Pranitam, all religion.
God initiates it, but then we take it and make a mess out of it. God starts it, and we take it and distort it.
So it's kind of a shabda, but it may be a parushaya shabda, it may be a parushaya shabda. But we can judge, we can compare everything with the Vedic knowledge, Vedas, ultimate authority.
Well, you know, it has to. We have to, for any pramana to work, it has to actually reach our senses and mind. But yaksha works when there's contact between the senses and the sense object. If the senses can't reach the object, if it's too far away, then there's no perception. So there's no perception of Shabda Brahman, even if it comes from the perfect source, if it doesn't reach us intact. If it doesn't reach down to us by disciplic succession without being distorted, then there's no Shabda Praman as far as we're concerned. In the beginning, it was Shabda Praman, and it may have been a Paurusheya, or at least it was spoken by God, but it hasn't come down to us undistorted, therefore we have no access to it, no real access to it.
But for example, Orthodox Christians, they claim that they have also kind of parampara.
Some kind of parampara, but it's really a messed up parampara. So many corruption, so much corruption, and so many things going on in their parampara. No?
I listen to the arguments, they're very strongly stressing that they have this parampara preserved.
Of course, they're going to claim it. Because they have a history going back to their founder, to Christ, of disciples and their disciples. And of course they're going to take advantage of that to claim their authority. But how pure was that parampara? Look at the history of the, you know, the authorities of the church. And how many of them were you know, horrible people.
Example people didn't want to follow religion. By many of their example people didn't want to follow religion.
Oh, they wanted to claim religion and use it for their purposes, but they also wanted to be total materialists at the same time. And so the spiritual leaders and the materialistic leaders are hand in hand supporting one another in their nonsense. Yes. It's a parampara for nonsense. Yes.
On a philosophical note, we may say, just to prove that the Vedic knowledge is indeed the basis of all knowledge, even in different religions, not openly or expressly so, but when they're trying to find proper explanations for things, and for instance, how God combines with the world, how to explain the presence of evil. I've studied some of them, and they inevitably come to the point when they have to start thinking about achintya bheda bheda, difference and unity of the Lord with the world, or they come to the point of admitting, even kind of begrudgingly and unwillingly, but there should be some kind of reincarnation. I spoke with some Christian priests.
Reincarnation. Of the soul.
I spoke with some Christian priests, those kind of priests who are not social figures, but thinkers and philosophers who study different philosophies, and they study their own tradition deeply. And they admitted to me privately. They say, actually, we do believe in reincarnation, but we cannot tell this to people because people will become lazy and they won't be willing or eager enough to finish their spiritual life in this lifetime. And also, they do admit, I read some articles or some papers by leading theologians, and they do come to the point of admitting the energies of God, although they cannot extract this concept from the Bible. But it makes perfect sense to them, and they just have to read between the lines, so to say, but they cannot prove it.
Yes.
So it looks like that Vedic knowledge, even though it's not codified in their books, but it's, as you said, it's the basis of all knowledge, it's inbuilt in our nature, and no other explanation makes any meaning and makes any sense to people in an ultimate count.
Yes.
But unfortunately, their dogmas prevent them from openly
subscribing. Yeah, and also, they're just coming to certain presumptions that happen to be right, but it's still speculative, not authorized, not properly explained, unless they have access to the real source of knowledge in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're not going to be able to even justify or properly understand the proper conclusions that they've accidentally come to.
Yes, and one more very important point, interesting point, that many of them, at least in Russia, Orthodox people, the Orthodox Christian priests and monks, they have Prabhupada's books on their bookshelves, but they have to hide them behind other books. So once in a while, they just peep in and just read some real knowledge, and they become reinforced in their faith. That's what they told us.
Really?
And when there's one priest, whenever we go to him, he says, what are the new books you guys have? Why don't you bring them to me? I need them, you know, I have to read them. And it makes perfect sense to him, although he has to follow that policy, their party line somehow. But he accepts the arguments and cannot argue with us when we speak about philosophy. He says, that's right, that's what we believe, but we cannot prove it by our philosophical knowledge from the scriptures.
Okay. These people need our help. Yes.
This anadi siddha sarva paramparasu means that from time immemorial the other schools of thoughts has been existing, is it? So,
well, not that each one of them is, but there's always been schools of thought. You know, and then people have been thinking ever since they crawled out of the caves or whatever. You know, since ever, forever, human beings have been speculating, thinking, and getting ideas in their heads, and even learning things from authorities.
But,
and the same patterns of thought reappear, because they're just natural. Even if the particular schools of thought become extinct and replaced by others, the same ideas keep on coming up and up and up and again and again.
But this speculation is it's a kind of mode of ignorance, isn't it true? That so, how can it influence in the Satya Yuga where all of them are in Sattva, and then in Treta Yuga where most of them are in Sattva Guna?
Speculation doesn't have to be in complete ignorance. You can have speculation in the mode of goodness. Sober speculation in the mode of goodness. Not purely spiritual, but careful thinking and making hypotheses, maybe it's like that. That's philosophizing. So that's been going on. Sages do it. They come up with their own theories to explain things.
But that forms as a deviation from the absolute Vedic authority.
It's a deviation from the absolute, but it's not totally in the mode of ignorance.
But it can't certainly give the right destination for the people who follow it. Is it?
Not with absolute certainty, yes, but sometimes it gives some right ideas. Sattvam yad brahma darshanam. In the mode of goodness, the mode of goodness gives you a chance to realize the absolute truth. Having your consciousness in the mode of goodness is required, a prerequisite. Just like you have to graduate high school before they let you in the university. Just graduating from high school is not much of a qualification, but it is a prerequisite. If you don't even have a high school degree, then they won't let you into a reputable university. So yes, the absolute authority is Vedic, Shabda Praman, But you do have to come to the mode of goodness before you can properly access Shabda Prabhupada. So sober thinking, sober speculation is an activity in the mode of goodness. And, you know, a person... Okay, Pariksha Lokan, Karma Chitan, Nirveda Mayat, Brahmano Nastyokrita Kritena. This is the speculative prerequisite. A person has been performing Vedic rituals. You know, he has a belief in the Vedas as the source of knowledge how to do sacrifices. And those sacrifices are going to gain him fulfillment of his material desires. So therefore he has had faith in the Vedas. But then after doing all these rituals, he realizes, karma chitan, that what he can achieve by fruitive work, by rituals, even if it's attainment of heaven, is limited and temporary. Therefore, if he's really a brahmana, if he has really deep intelligence, he should lose his interest in these things. Now that's a speculative process. Pariksha, with his own brains, his own intelligence, he examines the limited and temporary nature of anything you can achieve by karma. And then he becomes dissatisfied and wants something else. What does he do next? Tadvigyan artam sagurume vabhigachet. Then go to a spiritual master and learn the real meaning of the Vedas. But first of all, you have to use your brains to realize that my materialistic life is miserable and won't give me success. So that speculation, that sober speculation, is also a preliminary step. Satvam yad brahma darshanam. Come to the mode of goodness, become sober, think carefully, and then you'll become fit to receive the Vedic knowledge. So it has its place as a preliminary process. Speculation, but speculation in the mode of goodness. Did you have the problem?
Krishna says, I'm the knower of the Vedas, but creator of the Vedanta.
Yes.
Now, okay, so you told also on the basis of these verses quoted from 11th canto that Krishna doesn't claim to be the creator of the Vedas themselves. Isn't that...
I think so, yeah. Maybe yeah. Somewhere else he now, said, maybe somewhere else Krishna says, I wrote the Vedas. I don't know.
Now,
but it seems like at least in these two places he's saying they didn't.
How we can define the ontological position of the Vedas?
Like the Jivas. They're emanation from the Lord, but co-eternal emanation. They don't have a beginning. They're beginningless. Although, of course, they're coming from God's intelligence. Just like we're coming from God's substance and his consciousness as Jivas. But there's never a time when we were created. So you can say God did not create the Jivas. Because we always were there with him. There is no creation. So the Vedas never got written because they've always been there. If a book already exists, it doesn't have to be written. You may re-edit it, you may put out a new edition, but the book's been written already. Well, the Vedas have always been written, so nobody ever has to write them. Not even God. But they come from God. But they come from God as an eternal emanation, not as a creation at a certain time. Vedanta Sutra was written at a certain time by Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas.
Amongst the Madhvas, they classify the Vedas as in a different category than the Jivas. They put it as co-eternal and achetana.
Like, oh, okay. And not conscious.
Yeah.
Okay. Vedas are not conscious. The scriptures aren't, but there are the rishis who are the personified Vedas.
I just wanted to get to know what is our opinion. Because when there are...
Well, I don't think we're going to argue that... Well, the Vedas are existing in Vaikuntha. There are people. Everything in Vaikuntha is conscious.
Yeah, actually in Madhva Vijaya it's mentioned that when Madhvacharya went to Badrinath, he saw that the four Vedas personified were fanning, they were serving Narayana.
So how are they not conscious then?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know about that. The Vedas are not conscious.
So texts like yasya deve parabhakti hi tasya, how can the Vedas reveal themselves, choose and reveal themselves? Or is there some intervention of God?
It can be intervention of God or of some agent of God. It says that the artas, prakashantayati, the arta, the meanings are the subject. So not only the Vedas, but the meanings of the Vedas are revealing themselves. Now, is that to be taken literally? A meaning is not a person. The thought is not a person. So how does a thought reveal itself literally? I guess it couldn't be taken too literally. Because a thought's not an agent. It's not an act. It's not a conscious. It's like the cart moving. The argument is that that's metaphorical. That's lakshanavritti. The cart is moving. Moving is an activity of a conscious, intentional being. Doesn't Jiva Goswami mention that? Or this is from Kavya Kostaba? Karma Kartri. Okay, but it's not literally. Literally, the cart is not it's not a subject of. It's a subject of the action of existing, but not of moving. Movement literally has to be done by a conscious being. And it's actually a conscious being that's pushing the cart, and the cart is metaphorically moving, like that. The ideas. The artas, arta prakashante, the artas reveal themselves. Because it's not passive, it's active, prakashante. That must be metaphorical because meanings are not people. They can't say, here I am, you know. But metaphorically they reveal themselves. It's actually God or, you know, some angel of God is doing the revealing. Okay. Yes.
I forgot I'm not in the Bhagavatam class. In the same chapter we're reading now, 1538, there's a statement, Iti murti abhidhaniyana mantra murti mamurtikam. So it says, Prabhupada translates as the Lord who doesn't have material form, but whose form is transcendental sound. So the transcendental sound, mantras of the Vedas appear according to this statement of the Bhagavatam.
Okay, but that's the body of God. Murti.
The form.
The mantra is the murti of God. The mantra is the body of God. It's not that the mantra is God. There's a difference between the soul and body. God's the soul and the mantra is the body.
Said to be amurtikam. In other words, the first statement negates that he has any material body. Therefore, that mantras, these mantras of the Vedas, which are transcendental, cannot be taken as his material body.
Right.
They have to be taken as his actual transcendental shape or form.
Right.
Just like there is no difference between Krishna's form and Krishna himself.
Yes.
Is it how we should take, it's ontologically, if your question is about ontologically, we don't agree that Madhvacharya's philosophy, or Madhva's philosophy, that it's achetana.
Well,
so it is chetana.
You have different kinds of mantras. Some mantras just describe the absolute truth in terms of attributes, and then there are actual names of God. So the name of God is identical with God, but a description of God—that's, it's different and non-different.
This is Prabhupada translates it as in the form of transcendental sound representation.
Yes.
In other words, it's not just some description.
Well, the sound is spiritual.
Yeah, that sound of Shabda.
But not Brahman. God has his separated, not separated, but he has his spiritual energies. The energy is different and non-different from him. There's God himself, and then there's God's energies. So he has his spiritual energies. They're also transcendental, but there is some difference between him and his energies. Some aspect of difference.
It looks like even if we analyze the difference between energies and Krishna, then we'll end up being not able to even discern where Krishna is, because even his form even his name, if his lilas are all his energies.
Yes, by analyzing, we're not going to find him.
Right. So,
but the energies will reveal him.
So if the transcendental sound of the Vedas reveals Krishna, we can say this is the actual transcendental form of Krishna. Can it be? If they reveal him as he is, like the Bhagavatam or the Vedas, to the people who have spiritual perception, if they're entirely spiritual.
I would say it's an image of Krishna, reflection of Krishna. Krishna has his original form, Satchidananda Vigraha. Then he has his reflected forms, which may be also spiritual, but they have their separate existence.
Sorry for asking this question.
I think that, you know, God as manifest in sound in the Vedas. I'm not talking about his name, but the Vedas in general are not full of God's names. There's other words beside names of gods in the Vedas. They're very indirect descriptions of the Absolute in the Vedas. So indirect you can't even recognize them as descriptions of God. Those descriptions are, you can say that's body of God, but it's reflected body, it's not the original body.
But for instance, we have the deities here on the altar. We have Shilagram Shila.
Well, that's avatar.
Govardhan Shila.
That's avatar. That's an avatar. That the avatar is the original form of God.
But they're supposed to be like, for external eyes, they appear to be manifest in appear, material.
But it's archer avatar. It's really an avatar. It appears to be a statue, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. But the transcendental sound is different. In other words, when we're talking about transcendental sound as what? As a material image of Krishna, or is it?
Spiritual energy. Spiritual energy. But an energy. Not the original energetic, but an energy. There's non-difference, but there's also some difference. There's difference and non-difference between God and his energies, including his spiritual energies.
So we put the Vedas in the category of Shakti, or...
Just like if Krishna's looking at himself in a mirror. There is some difference between the Krishna who's looking at the mirror and the image of Krishna in the mirror. There is some difference. It may be a spiritual mirror. You know, in the spiritual world, he's looking in the mirror. But still, it's not two Krishnas looking at each other.
There is a statement by Gaura Govinda Maharaj, I believe he was quoting some Shastra, saying that when Krishna looks into the heart of his devotees there, and he looks at that Pratibimba, the image of Krishna in the hearts of his devotees in the spiritual world, then that image actually is not a Pratibimba, it's a Bimba, it's the object itself proper, not the reflection of him. So that's, sorry, maybe it's too much of an esoteric topic and
no, but that's okay.
Digressing a little bit.
Hare Krishna. I guess it's getting complicated. The form of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. The name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. But it's not that nothing is non-different from Krishna. Nothing is different from Krishna. So it's not that every single word in the Vedas is directly Krishna's name. It isn't. It's indirectly Krishna's name. And there are a few direct names in the Vedas. So those things that only indirectly point to Krishna, those words that aren't directly his names, those images that are not directly his murti, they are actual reflections. They may be spiritual reflections, but they're still reflections, images. There are the pure devotee actually has Krishna in his heart. Krishna is a prisoner in the heart there. So when Krishna looks inside, he finds himself. Not the Pratibimba, but the Bimba, the original. But it doesn't mean that there aren't any Pratibimbas someplace.
So can you say that Krishna himself...
But, you know, there are Pratibimbas, not there in the heart of the pure devotee, but somewhere else there's a Pratibimba, a reflection of Krishna. It may even be in a spiritual medium, but it's a reflection.
But can we say then that Krishna himself decides what he is non-different from or what he is different from? Like, sometimes he can empower even a jiva to be Shakti Avyasha Avatar to such an extent that the jiva becomes indistinguishable from Krishna for all intents and purposes, except for Krishna himself.
For all intents and purposes, but how is he a jiva then?
Well, he is jiva, but Krishna empowers him to act as...
No, but if he's a jiva, in any real sense he's a jiva, that's a difference.
For Krishna, he's a jiva all the time, but for everybody else, he may act as Bhagavan.
Well, everybody else doesn't know the whole story.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody else has the whole story except Krishna.
Okay, but then but there is a difference. If the Shakti Vesha Avatar is a jiva, that's an element of difference. If he's not a jiva, that's a different story. And if Krishna wants to take a jiva and turn him into Vishnu, I guess he could do that. But then he's not a jiva anymore.
We remember we studied a commentary and this quote from Madhyanjana Shruti, Ихайся Махатобутася Нишваситанам, а то Ригведа, Яджурведа, and so Ангира Садаха. So all Vedas are emanation of breathing of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Śrīla Prabhupāda in one place he states that like Krishna is eternal, in the same way his breathing is also eternal. So, like Vedas are coexisting along with Krishna, it's like an emanation of his being, his existence.
Okay, but it's not like at the beginning of Brahma's day, the universe got created. You know, when Mahavishnu lies down and he does it repeatedly, the repeated universe is created, destroyed, and then another universe is created sometimes. When Mahavishnu lies down, he breathes out. That's not the creation of the Vedas, because the Vedas exist before that. They come out. They become manifest at that time. But they existed even before he breathed. Because he's always breathing in and out. Or sometimes Mahavishnu is not manifest, but then later on he's manifest again. So it's not the creation of the Vedas, it's just the appearance of the Vedas at in a certain time.
So can we tell that in this way Vedas exist internally, they just manifest, appears whenever it's necessary. And but ontologically, what is the Vedas actually? Is it his breathing of?
Well, to say that it's the breathing of God means that it's a personal emanation. But don't understand it too literally that that's the creation of the Vedas. That before he breathed, there were no Vedas. That's not the fact. Because he was breathing before. He breathes countless times without any Vedas, and then one of the times Vedas come out and that's it. No, it's not that they're created once.
So
they appear every time he breathes.
So in some way, Vedas are part of Krishna's body. Like his breathing is one of the parts of his body.
Everything
his activity.
Is God. Everything comprises God's body.
Yeah, but we have spiritual body and we have material energy. So, and therefore, Vedas are spiritual.
I don't know. I mean, the Vedas are existing in Vaikuntha. It's not that, you know, they're up in Vaikuntha, they can't do any sacrifices or they can't study the Vedas because they're inside Mahavishnu's lungs, not available. You know, they may be in the lungs of Mahavishnu, but they're also there separately in Vaikuntha. So it's not only his breath. They're not stuck in his body, so nobody, you know, they're not available outside.
Also, I have another question. It's about, like, we have a lot of different philosophies in this world, and we have Shat Darshan, six original philosophies, which are basically deviation from knowledge which Lord Brahma gave to sages, Jaimini, Rishi, Gautama, and so on, and they received it in proper way. So they created this six kind of philosophies. So can we tell that all philosophies which we can potentially have in this world the combination of these six original deviations, six original Vedic philosophies, and that all philosophies originally they have present in Vedas. They are present in Vedas.
I don't know. You know, I don't know the scriptural basis for putting so much importance on those six darshanas. Where are they described? I think the idea of six darshans is really a more modern idea. You don't see Mahabharata, there's talk about Anvikshiki and Nyaya and different schools of thought, but there's no formalization of six darshanas in the Mahabharata or any Purana, I think. So I don't know if, you know, there are the eternal philosophies and all philosophies. I don't know if they what's the absolute importance of this six divisions? There happen to be six sages, at least before this Kali Yuga, who formulated six major philosophies, and they cover almost everything because, they just happen. The ideas are perennial. It's not like Shankara was the only person ever to formulate Mayavad philosophy. In previous ages, there were other founders of other versions of Mayavad and other versions of Nyaya millions of years ago. Before the Gautama Rishi wrote this one, someone else wrote another one. There were previous initiators of Vedanta philosophy before Krishna Dvaipayana. He cites them, he quotes them, the previous authorities on Vedanta. So the ideas, the basic concepts of each of the philosophies are perennial, they're eternal. But the particular formalization by these six sages, that's something that happened, probably near the end of the last Dwapara Yuga. It's sort of just an accidental thing. I don't think that's the eternal basis of all philosophy. The basic ideas of philosophy are all there, but they've been floating around in the ether since time immemorial, and various sages pick up pieces of them and teach them. Yes.
I remember one explanation that people in this world, they have different kinds of misconceptions, and because of in order to give them basis for their misconceptions, we have these six philosophies, and so this philosophy, they had to be manifested in some way, and therefore these six original sages, which were quite elevated in comparison with common people, through them this philosophy were manifested.
Okay. There are more than six philosophies. There are six orthodox philosophies. And then there are the lunatic fringe of all sorts of other crazy philosophies. So there are many philosophies, but there are six, decent philosophies.
It's like a six original deviations, six original possible deviations of Vedic knowledge. And then it started to sprout out and manifested in many different ways.
Okay. Yes. I guess we'll stop here. It's almost 11. And last comment?
Just regarding the thing that there are Vedas in Vaikuntha also. There was some hint in this verse from Rama Samhita wherein it is said, Maya hi yasya, Maya hi yasya jagadanda shatani sute. Traigunya tad vishaya veda vitayamana. And Bhakti Sanswasimana translates it as, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is the absolute substantive principle, being the ultimate entity in the form of the support of all existence, whose external potency embodies the three mundane qualities, that is, sattva, rajas, and tamas, and diffuses the Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world.
Okay, so this is bringing up another topic. Krishna also says in the Gita, Traigunya vishaya veda. The Vedas deal with topics of material topics of the three modes of nature. Why don't we start tomorrow's class with this discussion of what does Krishna mean and what does this statement of the Brahma Samhita mean when it says the Vedas are talking about material things? Then are the Vedas material?
I think
go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah.
He's saying, and diffuses the Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world. So there is Vedic knowledge regarding Vaikuntha, but he doesn't diffuse that in the material world. Maya hi asya jagadanda shatani sute. In this material world, he's creating and he's manifesting the modes, and then along with them, he's also diffusing the Vedic knowledge, which is regarding this, but
well,
he doesn't.
I think the Vedas are one, but there's all different kinds of understanding of the Vedas. The same Vedas can be understood like a prism, gives off different, all different colors. So the Vedas, looked at from different angles, give different kinds of knowledge. The Trigunya knowledge is what most people see in the material world, because that's all they're looking for. That's, their eyes are aimed at that direction. Where's the material formulas that will give me success? And that's what they see in the Vedas. But if you study Upanishads and then the Vedanta Sutra, you will discern the teachings of the absolute truth in the Vedas. If you use the, you know, the guidance of Vyasadeva in the Vedanta Sutra. And if you study the Bhagavatam, you will see that the Vedas reveal the absolute truth as the personality of Godhead and his devotional service. It depends on how you look at the Vedas. That's what you will see different things in them. Okay, but I'll discuss this further tomorrow in the class. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Tattva Sandarbha ki jai.